Down the Dump Podcast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Down to Dunk Podcast. We appreciate you checking us out today. Remind you, as always, you can follow us on Twitter at DTD Podcast. Look for us on iTunes, search Down to Dunk, and you can also find all of our links to our podcast from our website, downtodunk.com. Today, we have a special interview with one of our favorite media types here in Oklahoma City. It is Carson Cunningham from KOCO in Oklahoma City. You can see him on Twitter at KOCO Carson. And thanks for joining us, Carson.
No problem. I'm one of your favorites.
Hey, man, you're one of our most consistent, and you're one of our favorites as far as watching. And I was going to actually lead to this, man. You've had some pretty big time interviews recently. I feel like you're doing some progressive things here in our local market. You had Johnny Hendricks from I think it's UFC. I'm so out of it. And then Jalen Rose came and did an interview. I know y'all did that one as well. And so just doing some good stuff for KOCO. So you and Brian Keating are just a great team there as well.
Well, hey, man, I appreciate the words, and I'm always down to join the Down to Dunk podcast.
Well, I guess also Abigail Ogle, right? Isn't she part of your sports team there?
She's the third member of our team, so we're trying to do our best, and I appreciate the kind words.
No problem. Well, let's talk a little bit of Thunder basketball, and I think we'd be foolish not to mention the Toronto game that just happened. And so I got just a few questions for you. If you were to tell me the probability in your mind of a team being down 8 with, what, 45 seconds left or whatever, and coming back to win that game, what did you put that probability at in your own mind?
Probably 0.35% with Kevin Durant being that glimmer of hope. I mean, it was an incredible comeback, but I mean, there was no way they should have won that game. But when you have Kevin Durant, I mean, it's almost like anything's possible. So it was almost zero, but I give it 35% of one on that. So it was crazy. And honestly, I was anchoring that night, and I wasn't even planning on showing highlights because Russell went down. I thought that was the story. I was going to mention how the game played out. But once the game goes to overtime and Kevin Durant scores 51 and hits that game winner, I mean, it was an incredible game. And that kind of changed I was kind of scrambling at the studio to try and get everything on the air. But we got it, and it was an incredible comeback. I would have put it at almost 0% that they were going to be able to do that.
So as far as that Kevin Durant, not only was the last second shot incredible, but the whole game performance was incredible. So do you think that kind of maybe cemented the MVP race in his favor? Do you still feel like he's kind of the lead horse in that? Do you think he has it maybe locked up? What do you think?
I think that probably locked it up, especially with Miami kind of struggling the way they are. You know, LeBron went off for 61 a few weeks ago, and since then has really kind of looked human, I mean, for LeBron standards, while Kevin is still just immense. I mean, he scored, what now, 34 straight games over 25 points. It's incredible. It seems like every other game that ESPN Stats and Info Twitter account tweets out a stat relating him to Jordan. So, I mean, I feel like he's already won over a lot of the people that are going to be voting, and I think I really put a stamp on it. 51 points, game-winning shot. I mean, how many clutch shots as he hit all season. I think it's his to win, and we're so late in the season now. I think he's pretty much cinched it up.
Absolutely. Well, I got some follow-up questions a little bit about that, and it feels like maybe the conversation is just fading out a little bit about the Durant conversation as far as MVP, but do you think he's at all underappreciated by national media? And then the follow-up to that is, do people really just believe that LeBron is that much better than everybody, that even when he's not playing as well as a guy like Durant is currently, they still give him the benefit of the doubt and have him in the conversation as far as MVP?
Yeah, I think it's just because LeBron's been the best player for the last, I don't know, 5-6 years. And it's just going to take something monumental from Durant to kind of get into that conversation as the best player in the league. And I think he's doing just about everything you can ask this year to change that narrative. And I think people just that don't follow the Thunder, don't watch him every night, they're kind of like LeBron, where he says, oh, I'm jealous, he shoots it 30 times a game. They think he's just some volume scorer, and that's all he does. Well, if you watch the games, Kevin has gotten great at passing the ball. His defense has improved every year. It's really good this year. He's really an all-around player just like LeBron. And I think people just gloss over that just because LeBron's been doing it longer. They're used to seeing Kevin from, you know, 2-3 years ago where all he did was score. Well, Kevin is really an all-around player. And so I think he's done all he can to change the narrative. It's just up to everyone else to accept the fact that he is 1A to LeBron's 1B. And this year I think he's been better, even better than LeBron, which is tough to say because LeBron is, you know, we all know how good he is, and especially on the defensive end and with his passing. So, I mean, we're really dealing with kind of a Bird Magic situation, if you ask me. How do you pick between the two? They're both just incredible. I think they're both the best players we've seen since Jordan. Now, who do you think's better? That's open for debate. But I watch Kevin every night, and it's hard for me to believe there's anyone better.
Well, and it's one of those things, like Mark Stein tweeted out this morning, that Kevin Durant, according to Elias, now on pace for NBA's first 32 points, 7-plus rebounds, and 5-plus assists season since Michael Jordan did in 88-89. And so I think people compare Durant to a guy like Tracy McGrady sometimes, or just a scorer, and that's kind of where he's limited. But I think those people would be hard-pressed to actually prove that as far as statistics and as far as watching how he affects and impacts the team in the game. And so I'd agree with you on that point, absolutely. So,
well, and I'll say this. It's going to take Durant winning a championship, really, to change everything. Typically, over history, we've seen it time and time again, the best player wins the title. And until he does that, you have to say that LeBron still holds the title belt as the best player in the world. So This is a big postseason. If Durant were to happen to, you know, dethrone LeBron this year, then people would have to accept the fact that he's the best player. But I think you got to say, until he wins a title, that LeBron's kind of got the edge.
Absolutely, I agree with that. So let's go a little bit more into that Russell Westbrook, what we thought was an injury. Describe kind of your emotion. I know you try to stay a little bit more neutral, but I know just being an Oklahoma City guy or an Edmond guy, you have some, you know, allegiance, or you're kind of a fan of the Thunder as well as you cover it. And so what were your emotions whenever you saw that injury or supposed injury to Russ against the Raptors?
Well, yeah, I don't want to see anyone get hurt, especially, you know, I want the Thunder to go as far as possible because that's more good trips for me, right? But but when I saw it, I honestly thought he was going to be done for the year. I mean, your knee is not supposed to bend the way that it bent. His reaction, I thought, was identical to the Rockets when Patrick Beverley injured him. I honestly thought it was going to be a serious injury and they were going to be without him the rest of the year. I thought their season was on the brink waiting on the news. And I'm shocked that he's not hurt worse than he is. I mean, I don't know. Your knee is just not supposed to bend that way. But there were positive signs after the game. Darnell Mayberry was in Toronto and he sounded pretty positive. Said Russell sounded positive. So I kind of assumed he would be okay, even though I thought initially he was going to be done for a long time. And that just goes to show just how fragile this season can be when you got a guy who's had 3 knee surgeries. I mean, it was a scary deal. And then I was at Thunder practice yesterday, and every single person I talked to, Caron Butler, Scott Brooks, even Russell, you could just see the relief on their face when I asked them about, you know, getting the positive news he wasn't hurt. So it was a huge scare, and they said it even kind of affected them during the game. They were worried about it. They were praying about it, is what Caron Butler said. But I guess in halftime at one point, Russell kind of gave him a nod and said he was okay. So that's kind of how they got over it in that game. But they dodged a huge bullet, there's no doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me ask a question kind of as far as rotations. I still think that Scott, like he's more on a first-name basis, Coach Brooks or whatever, is trying to figure out his – rotations a little bit. And one of the things that's been surprising to me, and I knew that Lamb and Perry Jones would get bumped a little bit, but they've almost become non-existent in stretches in different games. Like Toronto, Lamb wouldn't have played had it not been for foul trouble for Caron and Andre Roberson. So what do you kind of feel like, how do you evaluate Caron Butler and Derek Fisher lineup? Because in my opinion, they haven't been playing very well, or at least not well enough to warrant the playing time that they're getting. So how do you evaluate those guys versus what we saw at least earlier in the season with Jeremy Lamb and Perry Jones?
Well, I think Scott above all, especially with how poor their defense was for that two-week span after the All-Star break, I think he values defense over anything else. And I don't think he trusts Jeremy Lamb to play staunch, you know, tough defense. And I think Scott Brooks really likes Caron Butler. You can tell he's playing him a lot. I think he likes his defense. And we all know Scott's love affair with Derek Fisher. So I think it's more of a trust thing. He's gonna play the guys he trusts to win games, and he likes veterans. You can tell he's always liked to play the guys that have been in the league a while. We've seen a little bit of that with Reggie earlier in his career. He was hesitant to play Reggie too when he was a youngster. So I think he just values defense, and I think he thinks Caron Butler and Derek Fisher play the best defense out of that grouping. And so that's what we're seeing with the minutes. And I think even more so come playoff time, he's gonna really lean on Derek Fisher and Caron Butler. I think Scott Brooks was probably happier than anyone that picked up Caron Butler, because Jeremy Lamb had kind of tailed off a little bit. He played well earlier in the season, but he was really in a funk. And the signing of Caron Butler gives him an option that I think he was really, really looking for.
Sure. And so let's kind of looking at rotations going into the playoffs. We're assuming that Tabo and Perkins are going to be coming back at some point in the next 2 or 3 weeks, right, getting up into playoffs. And so what more with Tabo is, how does Tabo's re-emergence into the starting lineup affect the rotations, especially as playoffs come and they just naturally get shorter as far as rotation? So what do you see minute-wise that splitting between Tabo and Caron and maybe Lamb, and then you have Reggie and Fisher and Perry Jones?
Well, I think we're going to see even less minutes, if minutes at all, for Lamb and Jones. That's really going to hurt them, because minutes are scarce as it is without Tabo. And we haven't seen yet Tabo on the roster with Caron Butler. You know, that he was hurt when they got him, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Sorry, this season's been a blur to me. But we haven't seen that yet, so it's going to be tough. I think Scott's going to start Tabo because that's what he does. Tabo will play his usual amount of minutes, and I think Butler and Fisher will get what's left. And so I think that really leaves Lamb and Jones on the outside looking in. This, you know, Lamb's kind of going through with what Reggie Jackson went through whenever they acquired Derek Fisher the first time. You know, Reggie was playing a little during the season, getting some good experience, and the second they picked up Derek Fisher, he didn't play. And I think that's what's happening right now with Jeremy Lamb. I don't think he's going to play as long as Caron Butler and Tabo are both healthy.
Absolutely. I'm kind of torn on it, because I feel like Lamb's leash, and I think Royce Young from Daily Thunder mentioned this, is Lamb's leash is way shorter than Fisher or Caron Butler. Maybe that's because he believes more in Butler and Fisher's defense, but Lamb doesn't get away with shooting the shots that Derek Fisher does, or making the decisions sometimes that they do, or missing as much as Caron and Fisher have. Especially the last couple games, but I guess it's just the trust in veteran leadership I'll have to rest in.
Well, and we've seen at times Jeremy Lamb can get hot. I wouldn't mind seeing him throwing him in there and let him take a couple shots, and if he's feeling it, give him some more minutes, because they're off. I mean, Fisher and, as you mentioned, Fisher and Butler aren't exactly just lighting it up from three lately. I like to see coaches give guys a chance and play it by game. If Lamb hits a couple early shots, maybe leave him in there a little longer and see if he can get a rhythm. But it's really tough to get a rhythm when, you know, you're hardly playing and you have a really short leash. So that's something to watch looking forward. And I would like to see Lamb get at least a little bit of an opportunity moving forward.
Absolutely. So what's your expectations? Have they changed for this Thunder team? Do you still feel like they have a chance for the championship? Are you a little more tempered on that? How do you feel about this?
I think they can still win the West, and I still think they can win the championship, but I'm not nearly as confident as that as I was, just because of what they're dealing with Russell on, you know, the way the season's played out. I mean, the Clippers look awesome. The Spurs are playing out of their minds. And so we all knew the West was going to be tough, but I think when before their injuries started popping up and when Russell was really in his groove, I didn't see anyone beating them. So I still think they're the favorite in the West. I still think they'll win the West. But I'm not nearly – I was almost 80, 90% confident earlier in the season. Now it's down to about 65, maybe 60.
So according to John Hollinger's playoff ratings or playoff odds this morning, they had the Heat, the Clippers, the Rockets, and the Spurs all with a better chance of winning the championship this year than the Thunder. And so out of those five favorites, you know, the Thunder, Rockets, Clippers, Spurs, and Heat, who do you think give me kind of maybe a top five ranking out of those five teams.
Out of who again? Clippers, Rockets, Spurs?
Heat and Thunder.
Well, I still put the Heat one. I know they're not playing as well. LeBron's still LeBron. I think the Heat are just kind of on cruise control to the playoffs start. I think they're going to mow through the East. And all these people that think that Indiana's going to beat them, I don't see it. I think they're going to clobber Indiana when they play them. I'd put the Thunder too. I don't buy that the Clippers, Rockets have better chances of beating them or the Spurs. I just don't. When you have Kevin and Russell, you're better than everyone else. You should beat everyone else. And from there, I go Clippers 3 just because their offense is off the charts good. Blake Griffin's playing insane. And I think Doc Rivers has really helped them out on the defensive end. I think he's turned them into a viable contender because before, you just never really saw – the Clippers were always one and done. One playoff series, they'd either lose or win it, and then they were done. Now I think they can literally make a run. I'd put the Spurs after them. Just because of the Spurs. But I think athletic teams give the Spurs problems, and I think the Clippers would give the Spurs all they want in a series. And then I'll go Rockets, just because I don't buy – Dwight Howard, he has no resolve whatsoever. We saw that when he came to Oklahoma City. When the chips are down, the Thunder are going to mow through them, and I feel like most teams will, just because I don't think Dwight Howard's a winner. I don't see his teams winning. Now, Harden can – put them on their back for a few games like he tried to do when they were here in Oklahoma City, but I'm not buying stock in the Rockets.
Yeah, I would kind of agree. I'd probably put the Pacers as a favorite over the Rockets right now, but and that's not even saying the Pacers have a better chance than anybody, but I just don't buy the Rockets stock. So what do you think as far as first round matchups? Because you're looking at the Thunder being 1 through 3. My assumption is they'll probably stick in the 2 seed. Which put them against either Dallas or Memphis or, maybe Portland if Portland slides a little, maybe Golden State if they slide. So what do you think is the worst possible matchup in the first round for the Thunder?
Memphis, the Grizzlies. We do not want to see Memphis for the Thunder. That is like the worst case scenario. Because, I mean, Dallas, they've done well. They have Dirk. But are they really going to beat the Thunder in a 7-game series? I don't think so. Memphis just poses a different type of threat than any other team in the league. They're going to make it ugly. They're going to put all the pressure they want inside. Perkins, Steven Adams are going to have their hands full. Memphis, they will beat Memphis, but they're going to have a lot of bumps and bruises along the way after beating Memphis. You know what I mean? So I think they would like to avoid the Grizzlies at all costs. I think Dallas would be much better. They'd love to see Phoenix. They would run Phoenix off the floor in a playoff series. Portland, I think they wouldn't have much problem with Portland either. But I think Memphis is probably the worst case scenario. They really want to avoid them.
Absolutely. All right, well, let's move on a little bit. And the last thing I was going to say about Thunder is I feel like there's something that they've done right now to upset the basketball gods. Because, number one, it's the Thunder have not ever dealt. And so maybe it's just coming back what they should have maybe experienced the last 3 years. But they've never experienced injuries on the level they have this year. But the other thing that's crazy to me is they're in the middle of a 10-game run where 8 out of those 10 games are in back-to-backs. So they play Dallas and Chicago back-to-back. Then they play Cleveland and Toronto back-to-back. Tonight they started back-to-back with Denver and Dallas. Then they have a Utah Jazz game and a Kings game. And then they end it versus San Antonio and then at Houston next week. What in the world have the Thunder done to make everybody so angry as far as basketball gods?
That's a good question. I think they built up so much goodwill through having, as you mentioned, zero injuries through their entire existence that they've all kind of caught up with them. But plus they're getting older. I mean, Thabo's getting older. Perk's getting older, so we're seeing some injuries pop up. But as far as the schedule goes, I think all teams have that stretch. Theirs is just coming up right now, so it just sticks out a little worse. But that's also why I think they're putting Russell on a restriction for his back-to-backs. They got a lot coming up, as you just mentioned. I think it's a good plan to rest Russell. It's concerning because the Thunder are so quiet and secretive. You wonder, are they resting him because they just want to rest him, or is the knee swelling? You know, there's a lot of question marks there that scare you. I think they're just resting him. They're gearing up for the playoffs. They're of the Spurs mentality. Sam Presti's a Spurs disciple. So I think they're, you know, the Spurs are never shy to rest their guys. So I think they're have a good plan here with Russell Westbrook, but I don't think the basketball gods are against them. This is just a normal NBA schedule. The NBA schedule is a joke. They play way too many games. So you're going to have stretches like this.
So here's just a question as far if you're Scott Brooks and you have to look, because the only two left are you have Denver tonight and then at Dallas tomorrow night. Who do you choose to sit Russ against?
I think you got to play him against Dallas. I would rest him against Denver. I mean, Dallas came into your home arena and laid the smackdown without Russell. I think it's important if you do meet Dallas in the playoffs that you send Russell down to Dallas, you let him go off for a triple-double, and you beat him by 20 to put that doubt back in their head saying, look, we can't beat the Thunder when they have Russell Westbrook. So I think you should rest him at home, beat Denver, and then take Russell down to Dallas and let them experience what it's like to play Russell Westbrook because they got off the hook last time.
Absolutely. And so, and then the last back-to-back they have of the season is that San Antonio at home and then at Houston. Who do you play him against in that back-to-back?
Let's see here. San Antonio and Houston. I'd probably play him against San Antonio for playoff positioning, I think. How many games behind are the Thunder?
I think they're two back right now.
Two back?
Yeah, two back from San Antonio.
I'd probably play him against San Antonio and rest him against Houston. I don't know. I mean, it's tomatoes.
You're splitting and hairs, probably. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Maybe home. I'm not sure.
It's just an interesting thing to me to look at that decision process that they have to make. And realistically, what's funny to me is the Heat get this pass. I said they're just in cruise control and all those things, but I think every team goes to that. And I think the Thunder, that little stretch they had, they were kind of in cruise control and they were trying to figure things out with the new Russ, but they don't seem to get as much of a pass on it as teams that have won. Obviously, the Heat have won the championship, and so they don't get the same kind of luxury as the Heat do in the eyes of media, it looks like.
Yeah, and it's just such a long season. I have no stat to back this up, but it seems like every year there's a stretch in like late March, early March, maybe February, where the Thunder just play terrible, go on a three, four game losing streak, and everyone freaks out because they're the Thunder and they're never supposed to lose a game. So I think it's a long season. You're going to go through ups and downs. That's nothing more, nothing less.
Absolutely. Well, let's transition a little bit out of NBA. And since we are in the middle of March Madness, let's talk a little bit about our NCAA men's basketball tournament going. So we already talked a little bit before the pod started about your bracket. And from what you said, like you're in good shape. So maybe tell us a little bit about who you've picked so far and who you have finishing as the champs. And then I'll ask you one follow-up question.
Yeah, I still have my Final Four. I still have six of my Elite Eight. So I'm doing better than I think a lot of people with all these upsets. But Iowa State really saved me yesterday. I have Iowa State in the Final Four. I have Florida in the Final Four, Arizona, and Louisville. So I still have my Final Four intact. The bracket's pretty shaky, though. I've lost a few teams, but bracket's still in good shape. I got Florida beating Louisville in the title game. I kind of think it's going to come down to Billy Donovan against Rick Pitino, his old coach, and CBS will just love that for ratings. So that's my title game. Still alive.
So as far as the basketball in college, on the college level, have you enjoyed the tournament? Has been good. Like, I've got to watch a few games, and I've actually enjoyed college basketball in general. It's been tough for me to get excited about college basketball, especially in the state level. Now, these last couple of years have been better, but that first weekend for OU-OSU was just not tragic. Obviously, it's not tragic. There's things that are, but was just a hard weekend to watch those guys play. Evaluate both of those teams real quick. Just a little taste for people that are OU-OSU fans.
Well, OU, I mean, it's such a sour ending to such a great season. I mean, they finished second in the Big 12, which was a good conference. I know the Big 12's not doing well in the tournament, but top to bottom, so you can get beat just about any time you play other than when you play TCU. So it was just a sour ending for them. I mean, you lose to a 12 seed. Lon Kruger now is 0-5 in postseason play, counting, Big 12 tournament games. That's a concern. I mean, but Lon Kruger's doing an incredible job. It's going to take Lon to get his talent, and he's still playing with a few capable holdovers. Once he gets a complete roster full of his recruits, I think he's going to contend for the Big 12 every single year. Now, on the other side, OSU, just a complete debacle. I mean, they finish eighth in the Big 12 with, I think, three of the best players in the league and the best sixth man in Phil Forte. And they barely make the tournament, and they go one and done. I mean, Travis Ford's 1-3, I believe, in the Big 12 or in the NCAA tournament at OSU. And he's been there 6 years. He's won one tournament game. His average finish in the Big 12, seventh. So I think OSU, if they care anything about basketball, they have to really look at the head coach and decide if he's the guy moving forward. And the results, one tournament win in 6 years, isn't acceptable at OSU. Now, he has a huge contract. That situation is yet to be determined or resolved. But OSU basketball's used to winning a lot lately. So it was a disappointing end for both schools.
Absolutely. So as you're watching the NCAA tournament, are there any players that stick out to you that maybe you like seeing a Thunder uniform, or guys that maybe are a little under the radar, or even some of the bigger guys that you think, man, this guy has a chance to be really good on the next level?
Yeah, I like Aaron Gordon from Arizona. I call him Blake Griffin Light. He's exactly like Blake Griffin. He's a great athlete. He's so young, you can just tell he's going to grow into his body. He's got pro written all over him. Julius Randle's looked really good for Kentucky. I worry about him in the next level being a little undersized, but he's been a beast. And I think Wiggins played horrible in the tournament. He was terrible, but you saw flashes of him this year as to why the NBA is so high on him. I think he's going to be a top five pick. And I'm interested to see what Marcus Smart does. You know, he took a lot of flack for being a flopper and all his antics or whatever, but I think he's going to be a really good pro. So there's a lot of good guys to watch in the tournament. A lot of them are home now, but there's still a few guys worth watching. Florida's just a fun team to watch. They don't have a lot of, you know, pros, but they're all seniors and they all play really well together.
That I didn't get to watch any of Creighton play, and I actually had Creighton going way further, but Baylor just out of nowhere decided they're playing at a level that not a lot of other teams are playing at either, which is just crazy. And it's a follow up from the Big 12 tournament, but yeah, I like that. What's it, Doug McDermott, I think is his name there, and yeah, he's a great player. And I don't know, it's just exciting. When we talked a little bit at a pod a couple weeks ago about NBA draft and kind of who we'd like to see fall, and I know that he was a guy that Andrew and I both thought would be a good pickup, but I think he's going to be out of the Thunder's range. And so the other one was, I thought Marcus Smart might have fallen further, but most draft mocks that I've seen still have him in the top five, top six, and so Thunder have no chance at a guy like him either. So,
well, you know who the Thunder's going to have a chance at, and I think they like a lot, Oklahoma State, is Markell Brown. You know, they've been to a lot of OSU games, and I've heard from several people they're looking at Markell Brown. They like him a lot. He's a little undersized. He's 6'3", but they love him. They love everything he's about. His jump shot looks great. He's obviously a freak athlete and can do a lot of slam dunks, and he shows off his vertical. I think the Thunder like Markell Brown a lot, and I think he'll be there when they pick. So it'll be interesting to see if they take an in-state guy. I think a lot of OSU fans would like to see Markell Brown stay in-state.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite. I put him up there with Ivan McFarland as one of my favorite OSU players of all time. So he's a good character guy, it seems like. He works hard. He gives everything he can every night that he plays. And even for a OU fan like me, it's something I can appreciate in a guy, in a player. So
yeah, I mean, you can tell he gives a crap. I mean, he was literally just bawling in the post-game press conference when they lost. I mean, he's one of those guys that just gets it. There's a reason. I'm with you. He's one of the better kids I've ever covered. I mean, he's such a great player, and he's a good guy, good teammate. And you can tell he cares. So it was tough to see him go out like that, but I think he'll play in the league for sure.
Absolutely. Well, that's all we have for today, and I just want to thank you for joining us as always, and we always appreciate what you do locally, but also by joining us periodically, and keep up the good work. And now I want to remind our listeners that you can follow Carson at KOCOCarson and follow us on Twitter at DTD Podcast and online at downtonight.com. Carson, thanks for joining us.
No problem. Anytime, man.